The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, and welcome to the China Sports Insider Podcast on the Seneca Network. I am Haig Balian, and in the studio is a visibly depressed China sports insider, Mark Dreyer. Why is Mark depressed? I have a feeling it has something to do with reports that NHL players aren't coming to the Beijing Olympics after all. We'll check in with our old pals on the Chinese national hockey team, who's in, who's out. Tennis player Peng Shuai emerges, and Mark had a little scoop there this week. And then we'll finish with a chat with Olivier Grignard. He's a Belgian who's been coaching tennis in China for a decade. But we have to start with this. According to a couple of reports, NHL players will not be coming to Beijing to compete at the Olympics. Mark, the disappointment comes in, like, there's two different directions here.
Crashing waves.
Absolutely. Did you go through anger, all the different
I think
phases?
I'm at stage six right now, whatever that is. So at the point that we record it, they haven't officially announced, but it's a done deal. They're not coming. And it's COVID related. There were so many different angles, and we talked about it on the show last week, that the players might have decided to pull themselves out due to the misinformation that was circling around in terms of the China quarantine rules and so on, and all these kind of scare stories. But it looks like that decision has been taken away from them. And the NHL, in their agreement to let the players come, they said, look, there's one thing that if COVID's too bad and we have to reschedule too many games, then we're not going to be able to allow that 3-week break because we're going to need that time to reschedule the games. They've already had enough postponements to make to trigger that. So it's a done deal, whether or not they've announced it as of the time you're listening.
So something like 8 years since a best on best tournament and counting.
Yeah.
That's really too bad. And a big part of the glitz and glamour of the Olympics is also gone. So that, is that going to put up, sort of a bit of a pallor on the games, do you think?
Well, perhaps a little bit too dramatic to say another nail in the coffin, but with the COVID restrictions, it wasn't exactly going to be a joyful Olympics anyway. But I was, despite the English accent, I'm half Canadian, and so hockey is somewhere in my blood, deep down in the vessels. I love watching hockey. I was really looking forward to watching the games. Working some back channels to try and get tickets. Of course, we still don't know if people are going to be able to get tickets. And with the virus, kind of roaring around the world, unfortunately, the capacity may yet be limited even further than it was already going to be. Venues, the last we heard, are kind of somewhere between 20% to one-third full for the indoor venues. But honestly, they haven't released any official numbers, so it could be less than that.
Speaking of misinformation, there's so much weird info just floating around here in Beijing about, whether tickets are going to be available. If they are going to be available, who's going to be able to get them? Is it going to be state-owned enterprises? There are people who work for state-owned enterprises only. It's just so funny. But the fact is, we just don't know
yet.
Yeah,
that's true.
One of the things that I was reading Elliot Friedman's column today about this, and he was talking about how he thought there should be a World Cup of hockey organized.
World Cup of coffee. Yeah.
A World Cup of coffee. This is what I need right now, obviously. the worldest cup of coffee that there is. But he suggested that it should be a World Cup of hockey organized as soon as possible. It's just, the World Cup of hockey is great. It's better than nothing, but it always just has left me kind of like...
Well, for me, it appeals to hockey people. When hockey's at the Olympics, people from other sports who aren't necessarily hockey fans will watch. And like I said, it's they're not as big as, when like the Dream Team goes to basketball and so on, and the NBA players, but they're still big stars. And, whether you're a hockey fan or not, they are some of the most famous athletes at a Winter Olympics, which is already smaller than a Summer Games. So the glitz and glamour, such as it was, has definitely taken a big hit.
So if the NHL players aren't coming,
yeah,
we were talking about this a couple of days ago, and I loved your suggestion for the Canadian team. Who should play for the Canadian team?
so right now, as regular listeners to the show will know, there's a whole bunch of Canadian players who are in the process of getting Chinese passports to play for Team China. They still haven't announced. We still haven't had the official signing ceremonies where they sort of pose with their new Chinese passports. So maybe call them up because they're in the KHL, who will be having the Olympic break, and they can play for Canada instead of for China. Who knows? They're going to have to the US and Canadian teams are going to have to look for probably European based players. Some people have said send the junior team because there's the Junior World Cup right now. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe they'll have some recently retired ex-pros. They've done that in the past. But they're kind of scrambling. They're going to be working the phone lines like crazy now because it's, a month and a half to go?
Yeah. One more question just about the NHL decision, though. My understanding was that they had until January 10 to make a decision without a financial penalty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 3 weeks away. Why aren't they going to wait just to see what happens?
Because there's so much uncertainty. And if there's already so many games that have been canceled that they know they're going to have to reschedule, and they're looking at, the calendar guys are looking at it and thinking, well, we only have so many days left in the season. They don't want to drag out the season any longer than it was. They've done that for the last couple of years, and it's basically just a nightmare. And they also have scheduling difficulties because, of course, a lot of these arenas where the NHL teams play, they share with basketball teams. They have a lot of concerts scheduled as well. So there's only a certain number of dates. So it is tricky, but massively disappointing for us here, at least.
So one group that may not be as disappointed is the national Chinese hockey team.
Yes, and the men's team. I mean, this is a huge result for them because they are, of course, in a group with the US and Canada and Germany. Now, all three of those teams have some, well, particularly the US and Canada, but Leon Draisaitl from the German team, one of the best forwards in the NHL right now, would have been facing Team China. So suddenly their games are looking dramatically better. Now, I should caution, I've spoken to a few people this week, and I hockey experts, and sort of asked them, how much better is it looking? And one guy in particular goes, well, they're still not going to score a goal. And I was like, really? Really that bad? I've been watching quite a lot of KHL highlights. They've got some good players. Now, it's obviously not at the same level. But given who they're going to be facing, these kind of European players, Team China basically is like a bad KHL team right now, if we're being honest. That's where they are in the rankings in the Russian league. They're not the worst. They're not getting blown out all the time. They're keeping a lot of games close and winning some too. So, they've got some strength in depth is not exactly a good point for them, but it'd be interesting to see how they do. I don't think they're going to win a game for sure, but they'll at least make it a little bit more competitive than it would have been against the likes of Connor McDavid.
Yeah, absolutely. And, there were wholesale roster changes in their team this week, weren't there?
Yeah, and a little bit of friction there as well, I was hearing from a few people inside the camp, because a number of those players, about six or seven players who thought they were going to be on the Olympic roster, have been released. Some of those players have been with the Kunlun Red Star system for 3 to 4 years. They've basically, given up what other career options they might have had, whether in hockey or elsewhere, to play for Team China. Now, I'm not saying just because they did that, they should get chosen. You've got to have a team on merit. But clearly they thought until very recently that they were nailed on to play in the Olympics. That was kind of going to be their dream. And so difficult decisions. On the other side, the Chinese authorities, they're also thinking, well, we need to give opportunities to homegrown youngsters. So it's a bit challenging, but there's still some uncertainty. We still don't know. You know, they're playing the team right now. There's quite a lot of changes. Who's going to start? You know, particularly in goal, there's some question marks there. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's sort of the consequence of not having a strategy from like 2 or 3 years ago, that you would have had the players that you wanted possibly on that team, and yes, they would have been playing together, but yes, that's just not how it worked.
I mean,
out.
The strategy was kind of laid out, as you know, but it was just disrupted so many times. And the
right,
fact that they,
meant, yeah,
the fact that they, like, we still don't know if they've actually done the paperwork to give them citizenship to make them qualify. Like, it seems to be done. They've announced basically this is our Olympic roster.
Yeah.
But until the rosters are officially submitted to the IOC and announced, you know, with the IIHF approval, who knows, right? But it's a lot of Canadians. There's a couple of Russians in there as well. And I believe one or two Americans, as well as some local Chinese as well. So a pretty international squad.
Yeah.
But they do have the advantage that they've been playing together consistently, at least this year, which the new US and Canadian teams will, I mean, they will be coming together last minute. So
6 weeks from today, yeah, basically, yeah, is when we start.
Crazy.
Wow. So you've had a really busy week this week. A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah, you've been basically everywhere. Every time I turn on the television, to turn on the radio or podcast, there's Mark.
My ugly face popped up.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on. Get at it. You know, face made for TV right there. So what have you been up to?
I was talking to NBC about, you know, the latest Peng Shuai stuff.
Oh, and by the way, you weren't just talking to NBC. You were the absolute star star of the show. Okay, so for the listeners, I don't want you to miss out. So here is the entirety of Mark's comments to NBC's Today Show, by the way. This is their morning show. Here it is.
This is a story with the Olympics around the corner that kind of ticks a lot of boxes in terms of global headlines and sensitivities.
We didn't have any technical error. That was it. What was, yeah, it? 5-6 seconds. Can we play it again? Like, maybe slow it down so it lasts longer.
You know, I'm sure.
I gave them so many amazing insights, none of which were used. It was probably about 25 minutes of interview, and I think 6 seconds got through. But hey, you know, I understand the pressures of the Today Show. So, you know, no hard feelings.
And then you were also on Reuters?
Yeah, so Reuters were doing a piece on basically tennis in China, and particularly with the WTA finals previously was in Shenzhen, and how that was a huge big tournament for them. You know, what does that mean for tennis in China and particularly the city of Shenzhen? Because that was sort of seen at a local government level as a real showpiece event for them.
Yeah. Have you been to Shenzhen?
Yes, I have, but not a regular visitor.
It's a big gap on my China.
Yeah, you need to go there. A lot of people have very good things to say about Shenzhen.
I would love to go next week during the Christmas holidays, but I don't think there's going to be much travel happening here.
I don't think so.
And it's cold here. I'm so
warmer in Shenzhen.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You might not get back. That's the
problem. And you were also on CGTN.
That's right. I'm a total media whore. I will literally speak to anyone.
Yeah.
So it's quite funny. They messaged me and said, so we want to talk about the success of China's hockey system despite the lack of funding. And I thought, wow, let's have some fun with this. I'm not quite sure what success they were talking about, and it's certainly been very well funded.
Yeah, exactly, right.
That was possibly some wires crossed there initially, because what we talked about was sort of inequality between men's and women's sports. And actually, we talked not just about women's hockey, but we talked about, you know, I was talking on CGTN about the WTA and women's tennis in China, and how they were sort of, in fact, paid better with that Shenzhen tournament than the men's at their equivalent tournament at the point where that the Shenzhen finals was announced.
And the other massive story, obviously, this week was the Peng Shuai story.
Yeah, so for people who had missed it, there was a cross-country ski event in Shanghai over the weekend, and Peng Shuai was sort of paraded out in front with Yao Ming and also Olympic sailing champion Xu Lijia, and then a table tennis star Wang Liqin. So there were kind of the four of them were chatting, and then an interview with Peng that made her story, you know, right back in the top of the news cycle again.
Right, with a Singaporean news outlet.
Yes. So it's Chinese language, the Lianhe Zaobao and Singaporean paper.
Well, and you had a bit of a scoop there, and that went viral on Twitter.
Well, yeah. So it turns out it wasn't a reporter asking the questions. It was someone who's been working in their sales team for about the last 5 years. So again, just, I mean, look, there's so many different angles to talk about this story. We've discussed a lot of them here on the show before, but from a pure communications angle, like, it's just been so badly done from start to finish, because I don't know who's behind this or kind of like advising, like, let's put out this picture or this video or this email and think that it's going to be believable. It's, you know, it's so badly done. And every time the story dies down globally, some Chinese state media or reporter puts out another picture or a video, and then it's right back up at the top of the news cycle again. It's like, is that really what you want? I don't know.
Yes.
Again, like I said, lots of other angles, but I'm just like, what is going on? What is someone thinking here?
So we actually had a chance to talk to a tennis coach, Olivier Grignard. He's coached some really successful players here in China, some of them who've been ranked really, really high in the world. And he came by with the player he's coaching right now, Lu Jiajing. We tried to get her on the mic too, but she was pretty shy. But you're going to hear her in the background a couple of times. And after the interview, I really geeked out. I mean, I really
did. He did, folks.
So I asked her, like, at one point I asked her, or you asked her about, you know, what kind of tennis racket she uses. And
you asked her.
Asked her what tennis racket she said.
And
she
what
said,
size grip, yeah.
She said she uses a head, but she uses a Babolat. And I said, oh, I use a Babolat. Like, I'm like that. First of all, that matters at all. Or yeah. Like, I'm on any kind of level that she is on. She was ranked like something like 160.
Yeah, she's been up to one in the 160s in the world. Yeah, she's been injured more recently, but
absolutely amazing. We did not talk with her, but we did talk to her coach, who I thought was really interesting. Here it is.
Olivier, welcome to the China Sports Insider podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Just give us a little bit of history as to your career in China. You've been here over a decade. You started off in the north. You're now based in Beijing. Tell us what you've been up to.
So it's been, 11 years. I'm here in China. I started in Beijing, actually. I'm a professional tennis coach for a very good tennis player called Lu Jiajing here in China. And she's highest ranking. Her highest ranking is 116.3 in the world.
So you first came over with Carlos Rodriguez, well-known coach who previously coached with Li Na.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
So how did that all happen? Like, how did he bring you to China?
So actually, the technical director of his academy contacted me. They mentioned that they will start to open a professional tennis team in China. And then just think about me, and my friend asked me to come over to Beijing, and I jump on the opportunity to working with Carlos and the team, actually.
And more recently, you have your own academy here in Beijing. Why don't you just introduce that a little bit and tell us what sort of age players that you coach and the ambitions and the goals that you have for the program?
So yeah, I just start my own little school here in Beijing 2 years ago. We have two schools, one in Guamao area and the other one in Xunyi district. Next year soon, one in Chaoyang, actually. So we're running a tennis program for every age, every level, for everyone's willing to learn tennis. So I'm trying just to create a method to share my experience to every beginner and tennis lover, actually, and try to have a fun way and nice way to learn tennis.
I just want to go back to 2011 just for a minute, because that's a really special year in China, mm-hmm. because that's the year that Li Na won the French Open. Mm-hmm. First of all, did you come before or after that happened?
Yeah, just before.
What impact did you see when she won that French Open? What happened in China in terms of like the excitement and the interest in tennis?
Honestly, I didn't see so much difference. It doesn't have a huge impact. But I've seen during 11 years how China have learned and improved so much, actually. So I've seen the progress. But say, because of Li Na, she won, you have much more enthusiastic tennis player. I'll see a big change from the day she won and the day after. Nothing changed, actually. So I've seen the improvement of Chinese tennis player and Chinese tennis year after year after, actually. So I cannot really tell I have a huge impact. It's very special and weird to say that, actually.
Of the women now in singles, there are really a couple of really exciting players to watch, actually more than a couple. Just outside of the top 100 is Wang Xinyu. She's 20 years old. And in November, she beat Emma Raducanu, who, of course, won the U.S. Open, right? And Wang Xiyu, she won the Junior Women's U.S. Open in 2018. Are you familiar with their games? Like, and what is it that they have to do to make it to that sort of next level, to make it into the top 50, top maybe even top 20?
I think both of them, I'm always confused with their name because their name are super similar. I just compare them with left hand and right hand. So what's the name of the left hand like? Wang Xiyu, she's very complete and like she have a very good game, very good techniques, very good tactical and good mindset. I think she can go definitely very far, but I think she need to build up more confidence with herself. Unfortunately, during COVID-19, she couldn't play so much and it was a critical age for her and stage to make good results. So I don't know how she will do, but I think she really much more increase her confidence on the court and out of court because she should lead more, I think. About Wang Xinyu, the right-hand player, I think it's more about her tactics and techniques. She's a super powerful girl, so she's hitting the ball like very, very fast. Her ball is very heavy, but her game is very simple in some way, so she should learn more or change the game, find more angles, maybe change the rhythm, like not only hitting hard, but sometimes play a little bit more slow, more high, try to push backwards the opponent, not only side to side. So it's more about game plan, actually.
Do you know much about their individual setups, like who their coaches are and where they train? Are they more part of like the national setup, or they kind of have their own coaching?
No, actually, both of them have been educated by foreigners' coach a lot, actually. So not too much like Chinese local coach. Of course, they do have it. For Wang Xiyu, the right-hand player, I know her father was the director of Chinese national team. And he have a great experience as someone I respect a lot because he's doing very good job, actually. So
I remember talking to you a few years ago, and I believe it was 2015, when Coco Xu, who was a junior player, ranked number one in the world. And everyone thought, you know, this is the next Li Na. And of course, it doesn't always work that way. Now, what are some of the pitfalls that you see in these really, really talented junior and kind of sub-junior players? What stops them? What's the difference between those who do make it to the top and those who don't?
I think have a great team. It's very important. Have the right people who surround you. Not only tennis coach, but having a great physical coach, to not having injury, to getting stronger, good physiotherapies as well. At this level, if you can afford, and you should actually invest yourself to and invest in physiotherapist, mental coach also. That's a big game changer. And I think great manager and great sports agents makes a difference. So have the whole package makes you going to another level. I think a lot of top players, like once they break the top 200, they earn some money, but because it's so hard to earn the money, they prefer to saving money. So they are counting how much they are spending. I speak generally, not only Chinese player, but they are really like scared to not having money for the end of the year or whatever for traveling. So they are counting like, okay, I should maybe not spending money for this and that.
And so instead of investing in more,
indeed,
you know,
you need
stuff,
to invest your money in your team, because your team, that's what makes you stronger and going to another level. So that's super important.
From a more general perspective, do you see differences in some of the Chinese setups versus the international players, or is that gap decreased over the years that you've been in China?
It's very interesting. I think Chinese players are more fortunate in terms of money. So like provincial team and like the club can have, and sponsoring can give a lot of support to Chinese players. So that's very good, actually. So they can really make their dreams come true. But sometimes, because like either the parents or maybe some people from the team, they don't have much clue about tennis. So they surround themselves with the the wrong people sometime, and they should be more careful who they are choosing actually, and have a bigger visions. But it's not easy for them also, because tennis is a new sport, so they're still learning and they still need to have more experience. And in the opposite side, for foreigners, like for international athletes from America or Europe, I think for them, they don't have enough money, and they wish to have great team around them, but they're not spending so much, so they have more difficult. That's very interesting.
In contrast to the success of the Chinese women in world tennis, and I had to do a double take. I was at the ATP rankings right now, and I was just looking for where the top Chinese men's player is. If I were to ask you to guess, what would you guess is the highest ranked Chinese man?
It's not Zhang Zhe anymore, and I forget his name. Yeah, Zhang Zhezhen, a guy from Shanghai, I think. Yeah. Yes.
Do you know his ranking?
His ranking, it was close of hundreds, maybe 130.
140 something.
Yeah.
140. Well, it may have been once, but today, right now, when I checked, it was 321.
Because of the virus.
Because virus.
Any tournament.
Mm.
Because he's not playing tournaments.
Yeah, he got his best ranking, but after his worst.
Every Chinese player is dropping in the ranking. So
that relative lack of high level success. Why are we seeing more women in China do well and fewer men?
I think because, like I always said, it is a new sport. The main problem right now, I think we should invest more in tennis coaching, actually. So like local coach should have more knowledge to teaching, because it's like for men, it's very complex. So you need to have very good techniques, very good tactics, very good mindset, very good physical. Everything must be so perfect for men. Women, you need, if you have a strong shot, one or two strong shots is enough. But for men, they are playing good for everything right now. So strong forehand, strong backhand, strong serve, strong volleys, return. Everything is so strong. And I think right now, like some local coach don't have enough knowledge how to teaching young generation properly, how to give them the right form, the right movement for forehand or backhand. So that's more a problem about education, how educate tennis coach in China.
Right.
And I think we should also be more focused on the foundation, on the young generation, like 7 to 9 years old, create strong foundation with mini tennis. Mini tennis is not developed enough. We should give more attention to mini tennis and build up their strong foundation.
So moving kind of like maybe further down the ranks, you know, obviously you were at nationals a few months back with Lu Jiajing and provincials. And what's that funnel look like? You know, I think in the olden days, people would go around and say, right, you look like a tennis player 10 years from now, so you come with us. Now, is it more about middle class parents sort of saying, you know, tennis is good, let's give an opportunity to their children?
Sports is a good opportunity for like middle class and poor class, actually, because the government is supporting athletes from the very young age, so they can sleep in the sports center, they receive food and they receive coaching, so they don't need to be worried about anything. So even you are poor here in China, you still have the chance to make your dreams come true, which is wonderful. If you join the sports center, you play a few tournaments, they like you, you work hard, you show great attitude, they will support you step by step. And if you do more results, they will support you more. So it is a very good chance for Chinese player, actually, which we don't have in Europe. Because if you don't have money, you just cannot play. Period.
One of the struggles that Chinese tennis has had, kind of, it's like finding the balance between the support of that state system. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this has sort of been famously discussed with players like Li Na, the support of the state system, but also the balance between having her own team and making her own decisions. Mm-hmm. Do you think the balance is kind of, is it just about right these days here? Like you talked about the support from the government, so that's sort of funding a large platform. But then at that top level, how do players know when to go from kind of one to the next, one system to the next, if, as it were?
How to break after and going to another level, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, I think create more experience, surround yourself again if you have the chance with better team, more coach who have more experience. Now you even have more very good quality Chinese coach, actually. Some are very wonderful. And if you have the chance and if your team is agreed, try to go aboard to practice. Let's say you go for a winter training, like once in you and once you now. They don't do winter training anymore here in China. They will go either to maybe IMG or Mouratoglou Academy or some other clubs in Spain. So to build up more experience and play with other players, actually, I think that's the most important things.
You talked about some of the Chinese players struggling in the rankings just because they haven't been able to play in a lot of tournaments over the last couple of years. That looks like it's going to remain the case potentially for at least 2022. Who knows beyond, right? What do you think that's going to do? How much of is Chinese tennis going to take a hit if tournaments aren't happening in China and if Chinese players aren't really able to go overseas to play tournaments as well?
Well, I think they can travel. It's not a problem for traveling for a Chinese player. Like now, like you see a lot of players, they're already outside to doing winter training. So it won't be too much a problem. Now I'm just a bit worried more about the vaccine passport. How international institutions want to recognize a Chinese vaccine. This is one of the main problems. Like Jing receive, my player receive a certain type of vaccine who's not approved by the Australian government, and she's not allowed to play in Australian Open. So that's quite unfair for Chinese player. The quarantines, like you need to do your 2 weeks quarantine, so your 3 weeks quarantine, I think you can handle that. So that's not too much a problem for players, because if you compete for 4 weeks, you still need to make a little break. So 1 week, two break, that's not affect too much. But how is going on for Chinese vaccine right now for Chinese player? That's pretty unfair.
Olivier, what's next for you? 2022, as we said, it's going to be pretty restricted in terms of tournaments here. And then so both next year and further down the line, how do you see things going?
I think I'm very, I'm not a famous coach, but I have my own experience and I've achieved a lot of dreams already. But I still have one more dream, is to try to bring Jing to the top 100. That will be my most beautiful achievement, because the dream that I have is bring someone from the scratch to the top 100 as tennis coach. I think just like having shortcuts, you switch players to player, you can make it happen. I think it's quite easy. If you're good, you can just catch the opportunity to coach another player. But I'm not a coach like that. I enjoy the process. I'm also someone loyal. And I really want to go through that process from the scratch to the top to understand that whole process, how it's working on. And if I understand this process, I believe I could repeat that with other player. And this experience will make me a stronger tennis coach.
So you're often at the Kerry Centre courts in Beijing. Can people come find you there? Can are the training sessions open to the public?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I'm coaching also. I'm helping my school and Jing, her sister, also sharing experience to young kids. And we are all there to supporting kids and young generation and even adults, actually. So we are really here to help and support people, actually. So yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming in.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, that's the show this week. Thanks again to Olivier Grignard. Mark, we have some pretty amazing guests coming up.
We do. We've got some Olympians. We've got some international superstars. One of China's hot young talents as well. Not going to mention any names until we get them on the show, but we're just trying to sort out the logistics at the moment. We had Stephen Marbury, of course, last week. If you haven't listened to that one, please take a listen to what he had to say. It was great to talk to him again. But yeah, very exciting time. And people listening, if they have suggestions about who they want us to talk to, who you want us to talk to, you know, what we should be talking about, please let us know in the comments.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and if you're listening on Spotify, they've just added the ability to rate the show and add comments. So if you're listening on Spotify, you can leave us a comment there. We will read them. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it's so easy to give us 5 stars. And leave a comment. A couple of you have already left some comments. We really appreciate it. If you like this show, check out some of the other great shows on the Seneca Network. You can find me on twitter.com/Haigbalian and Mark.
Yeah, DryerChina, DryerChina on Twitter as well.
Okay, so we will be back next week.